With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is the Sonya Poulton Show on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome back. In the next hour, we talk perpetual war, sick leave rates after the so-called pandemic, and Basil Valentine's winners and losers of the week. And a reminder of our question of the day: with shoplifting rates in England and Wales at a record high, we want to know what crimes have the police given up on. And here's our phone lines.
This is the way we're going to be heard.
From the US and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Well, our question of the day has got you talking just as it was intended to. Gary says the vast majority accept hurty feeling stuff on social media. That is in response to what have the police given up. Michael Wall says child sex abuse, rape, domestic abuse, all the crimes that the police are well known for. JK says it's part of the plan. And Rob on X says everything. There's no rule of law anymore anywhere. Indeed, it would appear that there is a problem. Talking about which, of course, I'm sure you've heard that Harvey Weinstein's one of his rape convictions was overturned yesterday. He said he was happy that finally somebody was listening to him. He's waiting to hear from the attorneys, waiting to hear from the prison system what the next steps are. He is 72-year-old former massive producer. Madonna called him the Punisher. I believe Rita Ora called him Daddy. Harvey Weinstein was known for many years, decades, as ruling Hollywood with his iron fist. And that is a reality. He was all powerful. And but obviously his convictions set off the whole Me Too movement. And now this is going to get interesting, because if they've managed to overturn this, and they've overturned this because they said there were errors in the original trial, and this can be extremely problematic. You'll often find that the only convictions that frequently do get overturned are those with the money to be able to force through a continuation of checking if the original conviction was sound, because poor people can't afford that. Harvey Weinstein, very, very wealthy. He will have been able to have appointed some of the best lawyers to look into this and be able to find that there were issues of procedure rather than anything else. So I think that's interesting. And I look forward to see how that's going to develop, because here's my prediction. I suggest that the next person who may be applying for, well, in fact, we already know that she has, and that is Ghislaine Maxwell, because the problem is, when you are this powerful and you are involved with the establishments, be that the British establishment or the Hollywood establishment, it is amazing what strings can be pulled. And as I say, I'm not suggesting for one second that the judges were untoward, but it is amazing what money can do in terms of drilling down on whether a conviction was safe or unsafe. I just wanted to share a little insight with you about my world. Let me, so basically about a month ago, I was approached by a production company, and they had said to me they were really interested in some of my views to do with immigration and refugees. When I was doing a psychology dissertation about 12 years ago, my dissertation was actually about how the mainstream media, so bear in mind, this was like 12 years ago, it was about how the mainstream media demonized refugees and immigrants in order to be able to create problems for them coming into the country and basically keep us all focused on each other rather than looking up to the powers that be and seeing how they are puppeteering us all to fight against each other. Anyway, so I was approached by this woman who was on behalf of a major production company. And she said, so we're making a documentary about immigration. We're really interested in you. And I talked with them, and I almost certainly was never going to do it, because not least they wanted me to be away for a month. And I'm not quite sure what my TNT bosses would have said about that, much less what my dog or my family or anybody else. But what I thought was,
I'm going to follow the procedure and let me see how they go about this. So they were like, we can't tell you. So yesterday, they called me again yesterday and told me shortlisted now, and wanted to drill down on the final points to see if I was still interested. So the woman said to me, she was now the executive rather than a casting agent. She was now the executive from the production company. And she said to me, so we're making it for one of the big four broadcasters. It's about immigrants. I'm sure you might be able to guess which broadcaster it is, although we can't tell you. So I said Channel 4. She didn't say anything other than laugh. So I'm almost certain it's Channel 4 because this publishing company has made a huge volume of programs for Channel 4. Anyway, so she started asking me questions. She was like, are you well? I'm like, yes, I am well. And then the final question, after we'd got through this whole question, she was like, we love you. And when we got through the whole questions, the final question was, would you be prepared to be vaccinated to be part of this program? And I said, well, that is a no-brainer. I said, no, it's not going to happen. That is a deal breaker. She was like, oh, what, not at all? I was like, no, not at all. That is not going to happen. And literally within almost seconds, that was the end of that phone call, which was great because it sort of told me everything I need to do. But I further found out that they've been approaching other commentators on social media and about the same thing as well. And several others also backed out when it came to the vaccine stage. And I'm wondering now, because I'm a bit suspicious, whether they have targeted a whole heap of commentators who have talked about refugees and immigration. And actually, it's nothing to do with that at all. And they want to find out, this is just me just guessing, and they want to find out whether we'll all balk at the vaccine question. I'm just wondering. I'm just hypothesizing. Right, on that note, let's find out what's happening with the UK news headlines from Gemma Cooper.
Giving you what you want.
I want the facts.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
That's moving. And here she is. Welcome back, Gemma. How are you? Anything exciting?
I am aghast at that story. That is an actual, I mean, as you were telling it, I don't know if you could see my face waiting in the wings to come on air, but I was open mouthed that final question was, would you be vaccinated to appear on a TV show? Where were they going with that? Or were they trying to lump, you know, if you question immigration or you've got a view on it and you're not vaccinated, you're part of this whole far right, everybody's a nutter conspiracy movement? Or what was the real agenda? I mean, I'd phone it back up or something and say, well, I might consider it. Can we have more of a conversation? And, you know, I'm just intrigued as to what that was going to achieve. Clearly something, you know, you don't throw, you know, thousands of pounds at a television program without wanting it to be, you know, headline grabbing. But there was clearly something going on. They were clearly going to push some kind of narrative, weren't they, through manipulating you to do with the vaccine. You know, how are they going to correlate the two, immigration and vaccine status? That sounds to me like let's all lump anyone who questions anything
yes.
into this big far right nutter movement that seems to be sweeping the planet and we can't control it. So we will try to control it. You know, astounded. Very rarely, Sonia, am I lost for words, but I am with that. I can't believe what I just heard, you know, honestly.
I know. Welcome to my world. Mad things like that happen. But I think it's really good to be able to share that insight because I've literally been tracking that now for the last month. And as I say, I got that call yesterday and she was like, we love you at the production company. We think you're perfect for this. And like, you know, all that big. And I said, well, you do realize I've been a journalist for an awful long time and I'm very used to this sort of talk. And she was laughing and all this kind of stuff. So she was absolutely trying to sort of schmooze me and charm me and get me on side. And but wouldn't tell me very many details at all. But yeah, that was the killer question. And I just said to her, no, deal breaker, not going to happen. And it was a deal breaker for her as well, because she could not get off that phone fast enough, Gemma.
Exactly. So there's the real agenda. That's what I'm thinking. That was obviously the real agenda. They were trying to see, could they convince you to, you know, dismantle your own belief system or not stand by your principles? You know, they love it, don't they, when former conspiracy theories go back into the mainstream and say, oh, I made a terrible mistake. You know, the mainstream loves that. But clearly they were trying to engineer it. Would you be willing to drop one of your, you know, your most basic tenets about what you put in your body to go on TV? You know, that's where it's just, I mean, you know, people that don't think the mainstream, you know, control narratives, people that still believe what they watch on mainstream television, read in mainstream papers, there we go. That's what happens behind the scenes. You know, they would have had endless production meetings about how do you think we could get these nutters on side? You know, we love you. Have they listened to your opinions? You're the most anti-establishment person I know. You know, you may look all sweet and innocent, but you know, have they actually, you know, they loved you because they were going to try and dismantle you effectively.
That's right. That's right. It would be actually a great project, isn't it? For somebody who's as outspoken as I am, that would be fantastic for them. Absolutely. So look out for that on Channel 4, by the way, because it'll be interesting to see who they have been able to manipulate.
It will. It would be interesting to see if this gets made. Really interesting for a Friday, you know, the machinations of the mainstream and how they're trying to control this mass awakening. You can't lump what is more than half the planet now into the far right nutter brigade. It doesn't work, because when you meet so-called far right nutters in the real life, you know, us, basically, we're not far right at all. We're very reasoned people, and we want to get on with everybody, and we want everyone to stop fighting each other, which is a very good point that you made, pitting us at the bottom against each other. No, the way we carry ourselves, I think, is with a lot less aggression and a lot more dignity than the so-called normies in the mainstream. You know, long may that continue. Anyway, onto some UK news headlines.
We love sparking you off though, Gem. It's absolutely wonderful when you go off on a passionate one. Absolutely wonderful. It's glorious.
Oh, well, it is Friday. I'll indulge myself a little bit there. But yeah, some headlines, which has changed a lot since the last hour, actually. So a lot of criminal charges being brought. Two men have been charged in connection with the small boat crossing earlier in the week that led to 5 deaths in the English Channel. And a 13-year-old girl is appearing in court this morning, charged with attempted murder after 3 stabbings at that school in South Wales. 2 teachers and another pupil. She will face attempted murder charges, 13 years old. An interesting story at MI5. Has warned university heads, including Oxford and Cambridge, that all the big institutions are being targeted by foreign hostile states. 24 bosses of universities were summoned to a security briefing in London yesterday in Whitehall, where MI5 said that you watch out for breaches of data, watch out for hacking, people trying to steal your research, people trying to steal your data. An interesting story presented quite calmly in the mainstream, but you know, I wonder how many other big UK institutions this also applies to, Sonia.
Yes, indeed. So where should we start, Gemma?
Well, it's a raft of headlines, but I just think, you know, there's been a lot of stories this week about young girls in the UK, record levels of drinking and vaping. We also, when the CAS review came out, we talked about in that, and one of the reasons it was sparked was that it wasn't the amount of boys wanting to be girls that sparked that review. It was the number of girls wanting to be boys. And today we have a 13-year-old girl being charged with attempted murder who will appear in court. And I've got a suspicion she's going to be probably charged and tried as an adult. You know, there's this whole debate about what age do children who go through the court system get treated as children, or what age do they get treated as adults. And I think the James Bulger case many years ago, which I'm sure you remember well, was one of those cases where, you know, you had children under the age of 11 effectively going through an adult court system. There's a very limited amount we can say as she has been charged. So court proceedings are active. And obviously today it'll be a straight appearance at magistrates, and this will go to Crown Court, it's attempted murder. But just there's a debate here to be had, I think, about where our young girls are going in our society. I'm not linking the two necessarily here, you know, drinking and smoking and this charge. But clearly, it's a violent crime, attempted murder. Emergency services dealt with it. Well, the school went on lockdown, didn't it? And funny how the lexicon of lockdown now can be applied to anything. I think previous to 2020, the school in South Wales probably would have been evacuated, not locked down. Interesting how that's another go-to Ooh. Solution. Same as jabbing, isn't it? Lockdown is now the solution for anything. Jabbing is now the solution for anything. It just shows how our culture has shifted. But it's a sad story. And also social media has come under fire again, because she was arrested and charged, and no sooner had she been charged than the other material was put up on X on social media, and a 15-year-old boy, I think, was arrested for some of the images and material he put on social media, which, once somebody's been charged, can be contempt of court because there's a potential to influence a jury and to steer a narrative, when really court cases you only can focus on what the evidence presented in court, nothing else. So that's another case that's now ongoing involving another teenager. In relation to this, there are now 2 investigations, scant details on what I think he may have put some images online that were taken in the school at the time of the attacks, which obviously police have clamped right down on. But it's a sorry state. A 13-year-old girl to appear charged with attempted murder will go through the court system. Is there a wider debate here about the unhappiness and dissatisfaction with teenage girls, or is it teenagers in general in our society and clearly lashing out against the system? 2 teachers stabbed. We don't know any of the circumstances. That will come out in court unless she pleads guilty, in which case that'll be a straight conviction. But that is an interesting story to me. 13, you know, 13 years old.
It is, and you're absolutely right. We have to be extremely careful what we say, but we can look at the wider issues attached to what is being said about teen girls, and that there clearly is a problem. But teenagers have always been problematic. I don't know about you, Gemma, but I was a problematic teen. And isn't that sort of a rite of passage to a certain degree? I'm not suggesting for a second that stabbing people is a rite of passage, not at all. I'm just wondering whether we aren't looking at the fact that teenagers, they were all hormonal changes, all manner of things going on for them, not least all the issues that are going on at school, all the ideologies, all the indoctrination that is also taking place that they're having to cope with these days as well. And it was interesting because Neil McAvoy from Propel Wales joined us yesterday to talk about this story. And he said it was like a gross overreaction. He didn't feel for a second they should have locked down the school. And it is very interesting that you said that's almost become like the buzzword, the thing to do now. And it is important. That's the whole, one of the things that we do as journalists is we recognise patterns and cycles. And that is our Gemma doing exactly that. So Gemma, what do you think this potentially says about teenagers as a wider picture?
Well, it's funny enough, just as you were saying about Neil McAvoy saying it was an overreaction, I was kind of thinking the same thing here, because the two teachers and the other people that were stabbed were taken to hospital, discharged, injuries not life-threatening. So was this, does this warrant an attempted murder charge, or is it assault? You know, we're talking very generally around this particular issue, but how severe were those injuries? And it does seem it's very difficult. Charges have been brought. So it's a wider thing, and we won't know until it goes through the court system what the evidence is. But it did seem at the time, you know, the school on lockdown, and there were two air ambulances, two ground ambulances, 10 police cars, I think. And that part of Wales is relatively quiet. So clearly huge drama for that part of the world. But this lockdown, I was surprised, the lexicon of lockdown. I wondered if it pre-2020, would it have been right, we're going to evacuate the school, get everybody out. Now anything controversial, keep everybody in. And that does show how our culture has shifted. I don't think we'll ever go back to so many things pre-2020. That our society's changed so much. Health is one of them. We talked about that at the top of the last hour, and how we deal with trauma and drama. Lockdown, anything, lockdown. And it's normalized, completely normalized. And it will happen again globally.
So three little words, isn't it? This, to me, has that whiff of those three little words: problem, reaction, solution. That's what it feels like here. And we're usually quite right about these things. Gemma, thank you so much for joining us. Have a terrific weekend. We will see you Monday. Right, we'll go to the break. We'll be back shortly.
TNT's David Curtin.
Rishi Sunak is being threatening that he will do this and saying, oh, we'll do this, we'll come out of the ECHR, that is, not anything else. But he hasn't done so. And then he's saying, well, if we're elected in the general election this year, which is highly unlikely, then we may come out, and we may give notice to come out if we're re-elected in 2024-2025. By that time, another year or 2 years will have passed, and another 100,000 or so military-aged men will have crossed the channel in small boats with not a single flight taking off to take some bogus asylum seekers to Rwanda.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
It's time to switch on
today's News Talk Radio.
Very entertaining.
Yeah! TNT.
I am delighted this week to see that campaigners have been granted permission to take their fight against the XL bully dog ban to the High Court. The legal challenge has been spearheaded by an XL bully owner and the campaign group Don't Ban Me, License Me. It targets the Department for Environment and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, and it is following the breed's addition to the prohibited list under the Dangerous Dogs Act in October last year. And the government, as you can imagine, they're calling for a dismissal of this. And because, as
as campaigners so rightly say, that the government's ban is based on unreliable evidence and a whole lot of demonising of a dog breed, as we have seen with the help of their friends in mainstream media. Utterly appalling behaviour. And campaigners say that the ban was a result of hasty action from Rishi Sunak. So good luck with your campaign, and hope we can get that ban overturned, because it is utterly unjust and wrong. Now, this week, a Freedom of Information Act has found there has been a 20% increase in sick leave amongst council workers since lockdown. And here to explore why with me is Dr. Tess Laurie. Good morning, Tess.
Good morning, Sonia. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you, Tess. Obviously, we're going to be talking about a whole load of things, but let's start with this. How do you interpret the rise in sick leave based on this report?
Well, you know, this is something we've been predicting for a very long time, since the widespread deployment of these experimental COVID-19 injections, which we now know are genetically modified organisms. And, you know, this is they were really unleashed on the public fraudulently, because obviously the public should have been advised that they are GMO products and genetic therapies, not regular style vaccines. And not only do they suppress the immune system, so they actually cause COVID symptoms, they also are, you know, we're becoming aware that there's widespread illness as a result. So, you know, we're seeing all manner of illnesses, from cancers very rapidly or reactivating, and also autoimmune diseases and so on, so neurological conditions. So this certainly, to us, it's obvious what the cause of the great sickness among the world's people is right now. It's not just in the UK, it's all over, and particularly among people who have unfortunately been, you know, deceived into taking these COVID-19 jabs.
They're ignoring the elephant in the room, though, aren't they, Tess? They want us to believe it's a multitude of other reasons why we have this, what they call a sick note culture. But they are refusing to look at the very thing that you're talking about right there.
Yes, well, I suppose if you have done something as terrible as tell everyone that these jabs are safe and effective without the evidence, because I'm a researcher, you know, I'm a medical doctor and a researcher and a scientist, and what I do is evaluate bodies of evidence. And from the get-go, I was saying there is simply not enough evidence to use this new medical technology in a clinical trial, let alone in a rollout to the mass population. The literature, the studies simply did not support the use of this type of technology. And so for it to be, you know, to have been widely used, you would want to cover up your steps somehow. You would want to ignore the elephant in the room if you had been the one saying these are safe and effective.
Yes. And of course, the government have done what I almost predicted they would do last week. And that is they've announced a welfare reform to tackle what they call Britain's sick note culture. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it's just clear to me that our political representatives do not serve us. They do not support the people. And it's really time for us to reflect on the system as a whole. You know, that it's always the people that get blamed for things, and yet mostly we're at the receiving end of what the so-called authorities, tell us to do. So of their policies, and it's these policies that are harming us. So we really need, I think, the people of the UK need to wake up and start demanding that these politicians actually serve us, and new bills and paperwork is simply not gonna cut it. You know, it really, we need to get to the root cause of this problem, and it's I would say this public-private partnership, the way that corporations have infiltrated our governments and our health systems and are influencing what, you know, they're influencing health policy and practice.
I mean, the reality is that exactly that, is that they're telling us to look here when we should be looking here, right? Because they cannot have us looking at them. And I mean, Tess, this is such a question. You and I probably could debate this for hours, but asking for a brief response, really, and that is, how do you feel the government's handling of this so-called pandemic has impacted the NHS and local services?
Well, it's absolutely devastated. It's brought the NHS to its knees, and it's absolutely devastated the health of the British population.
I mean, that is the reality, isn't it? How do we even go about that? I mean, organisations such as yourself, you've been very proactive throughout the whole last 4 years, at least, in order to be able to, A, show people more about our health, taking care of our health. But it would appear that our health policies, our public health policies, are not actually about health. Is that fair?
Yes, I think what we need to realise is that our governments are policy enforcers. They are actually not making the policies. The policies are coming from so-called think tanks, corporate think tanks, yeah, like the World Economic Forum, the Rockefeller Foundation, Club of Rome, the Chatham House, and so on. Our governments are not in control of policy. Policy comes from above, from the policy distributors, which are like the World Health Organization and so on, and above them sit these think tanks that are working, they're thinking how they can maximize corporate profit and benefit shareholders. So the policies come from the think tanks like the World Economic Forum, which represents global corporations, and then above them, of course, the banks control everything. The money is what is dictating our government policy right now. Our government has very little to do with the policy. And you will see it, you know, during COVID, how the same policies were rolled out to every country around the world. Now, how does that happen? It's coordinated, and it's coordinated from a small group of minority interests, the special interest group are the corporations.
Exactly that. We will go briefly to some news headlines and we'll be right back.
This news just in. TNT Radio News.
Ready? Go, go, go.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. The UK has come under fire for refusing to condemn the killing of hundreds of civilians found dumped in mass graves in Gaza. Former US President Donald Trump stopped traffic in New York on Thursday as he made a surprise stop at a construction site on his way to court. And London has warned Ukraine will begin ramping up long-range strikes inside of Russia as it starts receiving more advanced weapons from the West.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
I'm here with Dr. Tess Laurie, and we are talking about the state of our nation, talking about which, Tess. What are your initial thoughts about the findings from The Who that Great Britain had the worst rate for child alcohol consumption in the world?
Well, it's not surprising in many ways if you think about how alcohol is really celebrated in this country for any occasion and really pushed on people. It's always, you know, if you're driving into any of the supermarkets, the first thing banners you'll see on the railings outside will be promoting alcohol, the cheapest alcohol they have in the store. And you know, there is this constant, and it's insinuated its way into everybody's lives. You know, it's used in celebrations, it's used all these you know, this sort of treat yourself culture, or you deserve it sort of thing. So but I think most importantly, it speaks to the way that we as parents have lost influence on our children as well, because you know, the children are accessed via their mobile phones, via the films, and we really need to take back control of our children's health and well-being. I think we've outsourced a lot of it, and we've let the corporate market to them constantly. This idea that drinking is how one celebrates one's achievements, etc., and how one has a good time, which we know that actually is not the case. You feel really terrible if you drink particularly a lot, and it's not surprising because it's reflected in depression as well. There's so many young people who really are depressed, and we need to we really need to support them in that. So I would say that this is a sign, really, if this is what the statistics are showing, even though we don't need statistics to see how many drunk people are out, young people on a Friday night or Saturday night or whatever. We really need to take control of this as parents and as individuals in our own lives and reduce. It's a poison, really, you know. And I'm okay to say that everything in moderation, and moderation itself should, you know. But the excess, I think perhaps as parents, we haven't set a good example to our children. We need to examine our own behaviors and our own relationship with alcohol. But certainly with young people, they're so heavily encouraged to drown their sorrows or celebrate or whatever it is. Alcohol's there all the time. And we really need to help and support them to understand what the root cause of disease is and what being healthy means. And drinking alcohol, certainly in excess, is not good for health.
That's so right, what you just said there, Tessie. It's such a tremendous part of our culture. And it is, it's alcohol for every occasion, isn't it? As you say, celebration and to drown one's sorrows. And so there's never actually a time when we're not encouraged to drink alcohol. And so what you're saying is we need to take really sort of a root and branch approach and look at how we are portraying alcohol to the next generation and the generations coming up. And I agree with you. But also, this report also highlights an increase in smoking for young girls, and it suggests this is related to diminishing gender stereotypes. I'm not convinced by that, but what do you think?
We are being attacked. You know, I think people need to get into their heads that we are under attack from corporates. Our health, we are being marketed to constantly. And profit, you know, profit is the motive. Well, one of the motives, but let's just go with profit for now. You know, we are products to be consumers, to be exploited, and so they want to sell as much as possible. So if you take things like smoking, you know, of great concern to me is vaping, for example. Now, vaping is one of those really unregulated technologies. So, you know, one minute we're being told smoking is bad for us. The next minute, go on, everybody, have a good old vape. You know, let's have vaping stores on every corner. And people just, we need to kind of get smart and realize that we are being constantly played. We are being constantly exploited for our health and our money and our resources. So, you know, if something new pops up and they're saying this is fine, it's good, you know, no problem on your health, please look at it critically and say, has it ever been good to inhale chemicals into one's lungs? What are the studies that have been done? You know, I just ask people, please, you know, please think for yourselves. Right. Don't believe everything that you see on the television or on the radio or on your social media. Do your own research. And now is the time really to take control of your health and say, what is it that I'm doing? Because we are under attack and health is under attack. We've never lived shorter. Okay. Our lifespan's short. It's not long. We are seeing people dying at the age of 50, 60, you know, even younger. So it's time to really say, I'm going to take control of my health and look at all of those things that are part of your day-to-day behavior and ask whether this is good or bad for my health.
Tess, I'm so glad you've raised up the issue of vaping, because I've been banging on about vaping for about 8 years, and I absolutely loathed the way that it was marketed at children, no doubt about it. They created a whole new customer base with the nice fruity smells and the beautiful cases and all of those things, and also telling us it was an absolutely healthy alternative, promoted by Cancer Research UK, no less. So absolutely horrendous. So thank you so much for raising up that issue. Tess, events coming up. Talk to us.
Well, we have, firstly, on the subject of health particularly, we've got a detox fair, detox and well-being, coming up on the 14th and 15th of June. And it's very reasonably priced. It's a family event. You can come and you can listen to talks on health. Detox is kind of, I think previously we've thought detox as a sort of a woo-woo kind of thing. You know, it's for people who, I don't know, think they need to clear themselves of toxins. Well, in actual fact, we all need to clear ourselves of, we are under attack from a variety of pollutants. These include, not limited to the COVID-19 genetic therapies that were introduced in the guise of vaccines. There's also a lot of pollution in the air. There's chemicals in the air. There's radio frequency radiation, all these different radiations. I see you've popped up the slide for this Sunday's event. But anyway, the detox fair is for everybody. It's a family event. Come and learn about new technologies, new things that you can do, supplements, nutritional supplements, and so on, you can take to improve your health and boost your immune system. There's also music on that day. So it's sort of a music festival fair thing, and I think it'll be great fun. The thing that we're doing this Sunday is a live event in Bath with Dr. Brett Weinstein. And I'm really looking forward to this because we're going to be talking about evolution and transhumanism and what this push to genetically modify the humanity means for our understanding of evolution and creation theory and all of that. So it's going to be really challenging, a conversation not for the for the faint-hearted, when you do actually hear, when we will be sharing really quite a lot about what the plans the globalists have for us in terms of turning us all into cyborgs and so on. Now, Sonia, we do, if there are any, we don't have a lot of tickets left for that, but if there are any listeners who would like £10 off the ticket for Sunday, please email nick@worldcouncilforhealth.org. And if you just put in the title something like Sonia Poulton is the best, then they will know that it's about that.
We love that, Tess. We love that. Listen, thank you so much for joining us this morning, everybody. Dr. Tess Lawrie, fighting the good fight for us, as she's done for many years now. Okay, after the break, Basil Valentine's winners and losers of the week, and we talk perpetual war with Fabio Viggi. We'll be right back.
People might tell you that Lyme doesn't kill people, but we are losing people. People disappear from their lives.
One of the scariest things that I had to deal with was memory loss. Not just like I don't remember what I did last week, but like I forgot all the words to my own songs. I remember going to my primary care physician and he was like, "You are 100% healthy, there's nothing wrong with you." And my response was, "That's impossible, I'm dying."
I wasn't working. So I had all of these hospital bills. We had to move out of our home and move into my parents' basement.
I just wish I could have truly been present in those big moments, you know, when she took her first steps or, you know, her first day of preschool. Lyme is such a thief and it goes undetected because no one is looking for it.
For more information and prevention tips, go to projectlyme.org.
Around here, bushfire is just a part of life. We've been through it before, and we'll get through it again. The people here all look out for each other. We're a community that does its bit to plan and prepare, to keep everyone safe. We live with bushfire, so we live bushfire ready.
Live live from London. You're with Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk TNT.
And we are back with TNT's political editor himself, Basil Valentine. Good morning to you, Basil.
Good morning, Sonia, and hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world. We're doing winners and losers, I believe, of the week in politics. And I've got a very clear list for you.
Ooh.
Starting with the winners. They include all the students out protesting against genocide at more than 40 college campuses across the United States and in Canada, including UCLA, Northwestern, George Washington, Harvard, Brown, University of Texas, Austin, the University of Michigan, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, New York University, and Columbia University. So a big up to all of them. A big up to the liberal feminist Jewish author and intellectual Naomi Klein, who has penned an op-ed for The Guardian saying, "This Passover, we don't need or want the false idol of Zionism. We want freedom from the project that commits genocide in our name." Now, that's a real break from the so-called American liberal Zionist consensus there, with a voice as influential as hers. And if I may say so, another winner is Jeremy Corbyn, who similarly penned an article for The Guardian that reads, "Our leaders seem determined to give war a chance. Their thirst for conflict endangers us all." And he's right about that.
Very interesting, because our next guest is going to talk about us being in a state of perpetual war. So it's very interesting that you've chosen that. So talk to us about the losers.
Losers, the police at Emory University in Georgia, who used rubber bullets and tear gas to break up a peaceful protest. Governor Greg Abbott, who sent in the Texas National Guard. Texas state troopers were used to break up another peaceful protest at the University of Austin. Perhaps the biggest loser of the week on that score was Speaker of the House of Representatives Mike Johnson, who was roundly booed when talking a load of garbage at Columbia University earlier in the week. Also losers this week, Mykola Solsky, Ukraine's agriculture minister, who has been detained in a multi-million dollar corruption probe. Who knew that some of the billions being sent to Ukraine would end up in the pockets of ministers like that? And of course, poor old Hamza Yousaf, also a loser this week. He lost his majority in the Scottish Parliament and is now expected to face a no confidence motion, which could see him out of a job within days.
Thank you, everybody. Basil, I've forgotten your surname for momentarily. Basil Valentine, TNT's political editor. Shame on me. It's Friday. I've already got that Friday feeling. Basil Valentine delivering his winners and losers of the week. We will be right back.
The conversation continues.
I don't believe it, and I think that's a terrible position that I am in, that I don't trust my government.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yeah, have a lovely weekend, darling. Thank you so much. And we are back. It can feel as though we're living in a state of permanent war at the moment, as Basil was really alluding to, with a range of different conflicts erupting at the same time across the world. But is this purely accidental or by design? One man who thinks he may have the answer, and I sincerely hope he does, because I'd like to hear it, is Fabio Viggi, Professor of Critical Theory at Cardiff University. Good morning, Fabio.
Good morning, Sonia. Nice to meet you.
Wonderful to have you with us. It does feel that we're living in an era of so many different conflicts are taking place all across the world. Is it purely coincidental or is it by design?
Well, I think we live in an era of permanent emergency, right? And it's now taken the form of military emergency, so of permanent warfare. The reason, I think, is not so much that we are trying to help countries like the Ukraine, but we are actually trying to help an economy that is slowly but surely collapsing. So the war has fundamentally an financial purpose, just like the state of permanent emergency in which we're in. If you remember, the acceleration started with COVID already in 2020. We were talking about a war on COVID, right? So it was very much framed in military terms. In fact, somebody talked about the Third World War against the virus already then. And the whole point, I think, we need to put in the right context here. The point is to that nothing like war attracts money into existence. Nothing like war creates funding out of nowhere. Now, nobody has a war chest these days, so money needs to be created out of nowhere, quite literally. It needs to be created fundamentally by central banks and put into circulation as credit or debt, depending which way you look at it. And the job it does, it chases the debt that is already in circulation. So to understand why we live in a state of permanent warfare with a constant threat of war escalation, we need to understand, first of all, that we live in a debt-based world where debt is the main driver of absolutely everything. It's the oil in the engine of the capitalist system. And if the liquidity flow stops, we're all in trouble. And as I said, the best mechanism to create funding, to create liquidity for the system is by creating threats or manipulating threats that are already there, and in order to attract funding into existence, to attract debt into the now and put it into circulation. It's a debt chasing debt mechanism. And as I said, nothing like war or the threat of war functions to do precisely that, to, you know.
Right, the military-industrial complex. I hear you loud and clear. Yes, absolutely. So how are collapsing economies to blame for this?
The collapsing economies, well, the economy has been collapsing, I claim, for a while. And now we live in a hyper-financialized economic system, meaning that capitals flow more and more into the speculative sector rather than in the so-called work society. So investments are much more profitable in the financial industry rather than in the real industries of the world. And this is a systemic problem that we're facing. It's rooted in the fact that technology, starting with the third industrial revolution in the 1970s, and particularly today with the fourth industrial revolution, obviously with AI particularly and the new technologies we have, technology eliminates much more labor power than the system is able to reabsorb, which means that labor itself is less and less profitable for capital. Capital invests in technology rather than in labor, and therefore, because capital is just a blind automatic mechanism for profit making, it tends to go where, you know, it's more profitable. And hence the shift to a hyper-financialized economic system where really the heart of our economies are the financial markets. And within the financial markets, within the speculative economy, if you're looking really for the center of gravity of everything, really, you need to look at the debt markets, because the debt markets is where money is effectively created and put into circulation to be invested into the financial markets. So it's a very perverse, if you like, mechanism that, as I said, is debt-based. So it really depends existentially on the creation of debt. This debt has to be justified, has to be legitimized somehow. And as I said, at present, we are seeing an acceleration in terms of justifying debt creation through emergencies. It's a continuous streak of emergencies, nonstop.
It's never ending. Never ending. I listened to a recording that you made, very interesting, and you actually talked about if we had a greater understanding of how capitalistic structures function, we would be able to answer so many of these questions in terms of our apparent hunger for war. And I mean, the thing is, Fabio, some people believe that there is such a thing as a moral war, but are we really actually attempting to justify it under banners of like, this is about humanitarianism, this is about fighting terror? There always seems to be a justification that doesn't entirely add up.
Yeah, there's the media narrative. So they sell you, the mainstream media sell you a narrative all the time. They try to distract you. They try to sell you essentially a story. The truth, they never tell you the truth. The truth is that the system is, as I said, existentially addicted to what they call funding. You know, so they're looking for anything that would allow them to justify the creation of funds. And you know, we're seeing installment after installment of funding, for example, for Ukraine, and then also for Israel now, and Taiwan, and so on and so forth. This will be expanding more and more. It's a non-stop mechanism, unfortunately, and it's the mechanism they're using to keep the system afloat. It's a system that works for the 0.1%, incidentally, right? Whereas right. all the others are more and more excluded.
Right. That's the key question, really, and that is who benefits from this? Because I know right. for a fact that you and I aren't benefiting.
No. We are not benefiting from it. It's the 0.01%. It's this invisible financial elites who effectively, it's not a conspiracy theory thing. It's you know, power has always conspired, has always schemed since Roman times or earlier. So there's no point going into that argument there. It's a silly argument. The point is that there are elites that are trying to preserve the status quo because it benefits them, and if they have to do it, by creating wars, by fomenting emergencies, and by threatening people with all sorts of dangers, then so be it. They will do it. You know, they are themselves within a mechanism that that benefits them, and they don't want to let go of. So it's pretty obvious to me that it's been driven, that it's been steered. This mechanism has been steered by those who benefit from it.
Yeah, but they manufacture consent, don't they, by telling us, oh, this is about terrorism and this is about humanitarianism and all of those things.
Absolutely.
But one of the things that I think you so accurately said is this really is all about totalitarianism. That's what it's really about.
Eventually creates a society where people are poorer and poorer, more and more disenfranchised. And that poverty, the new sort of mass impoverishment that we're seeing, needs to be controlled, needs to be brought under control one way or another. Otherwise, you get what you have is chaos. You have a threat for them too. So that's why we're moving to a more and more authoritarian structure. Which is no longer just a money structure, right? It's not just based on social mobility and that kind of those kind of ambitions. It's really, especially with the help of the kind of technology that they have today, artificial intelligence and so on. It's about building a system of control, a kind of global panopticon where people are more and more under control, essentially, right? When you have so many people who have to accept the fact that they will live in poor conditions, then you have to find ways of controlling them. That's obviously from the point of view of the elites, what we call the elites.
I think, there's so many comments flooding in for this, Fabio, but Max Bliss says war is used to transform society and control the nations. War creates debt and government control. I think you'd probably support that, wouldn't you?
Yes. Well, yes. I mean, if you think about it, the military-industrial complex is the biggest industry we have, right? Especially in the West, but not only in the West. You think about the Russian military-industrial complex. They've grown immensely. They've created a really massive sort of military industry. China is also growing in those terms. But in the West, because we are so dependent on debt creation, the military-industrial complex plays a fundamental role there. And it has done for years, but now the more the situation gets problematic, the more we implode, the more we rely on such strategies, which are effectively destructive strategies, whether they are only threats or real wars. You know, there's a very fine line between the two. It's very easy to go for just a threat of war to an actual conflict. So that's why we have to be really wary also, because it can always turn into a real conflict. It's already a real conflict for a lot of people in the world, but yes. You know, all of a sudden we might find ourselves within a conflict.
Yes, we have to be more discerning, don't we? Whenever they come out beating their war drums, we have to be prepared for the fact that almost certainly we are being manipulated into responding. And I think that's something that I urge people to seek out Fabio's work online. It's absolutely brilliant. It will give you a brilliant insight into what is taking place. This is very cultish behaviour that we're being subjected to a great deal of the time. Fabio, thank you so much for joining us this morning on today's News Talk. Really appreciate that greatly. And that about brings us to the end of this week's show. Can you believe it? We're on Friday. Don't forget, we have David Curtin coming up next. He'll be joined by Dr. Gary Sidley and Charles Maller. Dr. Gary Sidley is brilliant, was on The Breakfast Show the other week. Dr. Gary Sidley is the man who's responsible for highlighting how our taxpayer funds were used to manipulate us into obeying to all of the ridiculous, obscene COVID measures. And as I say, that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you to all of you for taking part, for answering our questions of the day throughout the week, for sending in your contributions, for the entire team who bring me here day in, day out. I wish you a wonderful weekend. Do not go anywhere. Take care of yourself.